You see, our gospel lesson this morning comes once again from the Gospel of Matthew, the 7th chapter, which is from the Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to be reading two verses, 7 and 8. As I read these ancient words, listen for something new that's being spoken into your life as we gather together this morning. And this is Jesus speaking. Ask, and it will be given to you. Search, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who searches finds. Everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. I can't get this stole right. I'm sorry about that. Okay, there we go. Let us pray. May the words of my mouth and meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Okay, the best I can tell is this. This is where we stand right now. This week, this is week three. Week three of what initially was envisioned as a six-part sermon series. But, as is usually the case, I miscalculated the timing a little bit. So the bottom line is this. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how long it's going to take to wrestle with all the implications raised by Father Richard Rohr's book, Breathing Underwater, Spirituality and the 12 Steps. It's proven to be a much more substantive and significant journey than I first anticipated. So just thank you for your patience, your participation, and if you missed something, we have posted it on our website. So if you say, well, I missed the first one, I'm not coming back ever. No, go back and you may listen if you wish. Well, to remind everyone, our guiding thesis for this study, this reflection this fall, is this. Over the course of our lives, we have come to the conclusion that there has to be a better way to do life than we are currently doing it. There has to be a better way. There has to be a way of living that will offer greater depth of life than we're currently experiencing. It seems to exist a profound disconnect between the faith we profess and the faith we are experiencing, the faith we are living. We call Jesus the Prince of Peace, but where's the peace in our lives? Okay. It's not that we are not happy necessarily, and it's not that we're not successful necessarily, and it's not that we don't feel blessed necessarily, whatever that means. No, it's something more profound than that. And this is where Father Rohr's wisdom is most helpful to me. He uses the metaphor of addiction to describe our lives of faith, and he uses addiction as a metaphor for sin. And of course, the word itself is problematic, sin. That word is problematic. It's problematic because it's lost meaning for most of us. You know, it's been reduced simply to a sin in the church, simply to a synonym for bad behavior or breaking the rules. And because of this, most of us just dismiss it as a vestige of a bygone church age in which guilt was the name of the game and cosmic threats were used to keep people in line and in the pews. Now it doesn't work. Now we just snicker. People say sin. We go, funny, and move on. And that's too bad because with that dismissal becomes a missed opportunity for transformation, to change, to have our lives transfigured. And I believe that it may be of help to us to make the move suggested by Rohr and substitute these words, our way of doing life, for the word sin. Our way of doing life. Rohr suggests that if we can begin to see our way of doing life as an addictive behavior that impedes our path into God, that can change everything. That can change our lives fundamentally. In other words, our sin, our way of living our lives, is not just something that ticks off an angry and vengeful God. No. It's rather a destructive way of being in this world that inhibits full participation in life and in God, in God's self. Rohr suggested the key to overcoming this destructive pattern of living is to seek out a new way of living. a new way that will lead to spiritual wholeness, salvation, and in the words of the 12-step program, recovery. Recovery. Okay. In her marvelous poem, Breathing Underwater, poet Kara Bielek writes, and this is going to be our guiding verses in some ways, this poem, each week during the series, and I'll read just a little bit of it today. I built my house by the sea, not on the sands, mind you, not on the shifting sand. I built it of rock, a strong house by a strong sea. And we got well acquainted, the sea and I, good neighbors. Not that we spoke much. We met in silences, respectful, keeping our distance. And then one day, and I still don't know how it happened, the sea came. And I thought of flight, and I thought of drowning, and I thought of death. And while I thought, the sea crept higher until it reached my door. And I knew then there was neither flight, nor death, nor drowning. That when the sea comes calling, you stop being neighbors. Well acquainted, friendly at a distance, neighbors. And you give your house for a coral castle, and you learn to breathe underwater. It is amazing to me. It's even counterintuitive that when we are hunkered down in a destructive way of living, addiction, if you will, we have the hardest time seeing that very fact. And even a harder time embracing that truth. Somehow we continue to live the lie, day in, day out, year after year, as our lives sink further and further into meaninglessness. And at the same time, we tell ourselves that everything's wonderful. Everything is great. I'm okay. Look at my house. Well, that is until the sea comes and it finds its way to our door. And that changes everything. Bill W. We admitted we were powerless, that our lives had become unmanageable. Last week, we remember the way Jesus said that. He said, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. We admitted that we were powerless, that we were living unmanageable, unsustainable lives. Friends, we call that the first step. In our study this fall, we call that the first step in a renewed spirituality. The first step toward life, all uppercase. It's a huge step. And for whatever reason, most of us find it incredibly difficult to take that first step. And some of us never take it. Some of us never. And when we do, there is the tendency to become a little bit discouraged when we take that first step, hard as it is, and we look ahead at 11 more. This is where the ancient Taoist adage brings its wisdom to bear. A journey of 10,000 miles begins with a single step. Friends, the message of our lives is this: we've got to start somewhere, or we'll never get anywhere. Step one. Step one opens us to new possibilities. Step two then begins to reveal the path to that new way of doing life. Bill W. writes, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Wow. What a revelatory moment that is. When all of a sudden you realize there is a God and we're not it. Did you just learn that? I just realized it recently. There is a God and I'm not it. I'm not God. Wow. Of course, my guess is that most of us would not have a problem taking this step if we've already taken the first step. If indeed we recognize and acknowledge in the core of our being that our lives have gotten off course, they've gotten a bit unwieldy, they have become unmanageable, then it shouldn't be too much of a spiritual stretch to embrace the idea that we need help from someone or something greater than we are. And the fact that we're in this place today would suggest that we have at least some rudimentary belief in God, specifically a God revealed in the life and ministry of Jesus of Nazareth, a God that Jesus references in his most beloved parable, parable of the prodigal son. And you remember that story, you know, the kid, you know, runs off, comes back, and the father just goes like this. You know, if I was telling the story, it'd be more like, you know, no, but it's like this. No words. Just come here. Wow. I believe if we can find a way to take that first step, then the proverbial other shoe will inevitably drop, and we will take the second step. Having said that, based on my personal experience and my observation of human nature, it's my hunch that step three is where things get a bit more problematic for most of us. You see, when you move up to step three, you're beginning to move from the theoretical to the practical. Or maybe a better way to put it, you're moving from the head to the heart. You see, I can talk a good game. I know the theory. I know the right words. I know the theological jargon, the philosophical jargon. I can embrace the concept, but here's the way Bill W. put it. Step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Yikes. Yikes. What do you mean? I actually have to do something? I have to give up something? I thought God worked for me. You know, the whole intercessory prayer stuff. You know, dear God, I need this, and I need this, and I need this, and I need it by tomorrow. I thought God worked for me. Wow, what's all this talk of turning our will and our lives over to the care of God? I don't like that. I don't like it one bit. I want to do things on my terms. Does that sound familiar? Does that feel familiar? Sure it does. Rohr entitles this chapter of his book, Sweet Surrender. Now, to me, those two words should never be together. Sweet and surrender? Throw it out. Throw it out. Surrender. What's that all about? That cuts against everything we have been taught all of our lives. It brings up the kind of the image of strife, the image of warfare. And so to surrender is to lose. To surrender is to give up. To surrender is to admit we cannot do it. It is to acknowledge our inadequacy or our insufficiency. And how can we possibly do that? It goes against everything we believe, everything we hope for, everything we aspire to. Just forget it. Forget it. Friends, it's my belief that this is one of the most critical moments in our journey of faith. That point, that step. It's a tipping point of sorts. Move forward and we have the momentum on our side. Fall back and the first two steps of our journey are jeopardized. Wow. This is a difficult stuff to process. And maybe the use of surrender is not helpful. Maybe that's just not helpful here. Maybe a better way to envision this step is an entrusting of ourselves. We made a decision to entrust our will and our hope and our future and our lives over to the care of God. Here it is. My way is not working. Take it. Preserve it. Rohr suggests that it is the entrusting of our lives, quote, to another whom we trust more than we trust ourselves. I love that line. That is beautiful to me. I'm going to entrust my life to someone I trust more than I trust myself. Wow. That is beautiful. Jesus put it this way as he taught the people. If any want to become my followers, then let them renounce themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. You hold on to that life, you're going to lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world? Look at all I got. and forfeit their life. The Greek verb translated renounce is the verb aparneomai, which means to renounce a claim to something. That's what it means. In this case, it is a renouncing of the claim to the way we've been doing life. In other words, here's my life. It's no longer mine. Gracious God, take it. Do something with it. Bill W. said, we made a decision to do this, and we did. We followed through. Friends, talk's cheap. If we believe that our way of doing life has become unmanageable or unsustainable, and we believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, then it's time to make a decision to move forward and to say, here is my life, let's go. Have you ever taken a golf lesson? No? Nobody's ever? Never? Just forget it. Get out of here. No. Golf lesson. We'll just pretend like you. Maybe you know a golfer. Okay, good. Anyway, those of you who are golfers out there probably know what I'm about to say. You've been playing golf your whole life. You know, you're getting by. You know, you can go out, you can play 18. No problem. You can get by a little bit. In fact, maybe you're better than average. Okay? You're better than average. But and sometimes even the captain chooses your shot for the rest of the team to play. But then you decide you're going to take a lesson. And so you take a lesson, and the pro tells you something that you do not want to hear. The pro says to you, that grip that you're using has got to go. That is the wrong grip. And that swing, no good. No good. You're going to have to overhaul that swing. New grip, new swing. You cannot believe it. You cannot believe it. So it becomes your choice. You say, you could just keep on hacking your way around that course. Life's fine. You think it is. Or you can learn a new way of playing. But it's going to take some work. It's going to take some work. Paul put it a little bit more eloquently than I did. Hard to believe. When he writes to the church in Philippi, he says, therefore, my beloved, work out your own salvation. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for God's good pleasure. And Jesus did even better than that. Ask and it will be given you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives. Everyone who searches finds, and everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. So what does all this mean? We've relinquished control, so now what? How do we move forward from this point? It's unmanageable. There's something bigger out there. Trusting my life to this something. Then what do? Step four. Hold on. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Inventory time. I don't like that. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Friends, I hope you'll come back next week. And we're going to begin to take that inventory and try to take that next step together as we try to find a new way of doing life that will bring depth to our lives. As we strive together to learn how to breathe underwater.